everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions regarding your health, your well-being, your relationships. This is really dedicated to giving you more knowledge, more wisdom, so you really can find your path in your life. And again, it's just a pleasure having you join me today. For those who may be joining this program for the first time, I personally want to welcome you and invite you to go to my website, which is What Women Must Know. That's also my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. Not only will you get some special reports and articles, but I also get to send these podcasts to you every week. So in case you can't listen to them live time, you can get them sent to your email address, in your inbox, or over at Facebook, and you'll be able to listen to them at your convenience. So you don't want to miss any one of these conversations. They are all so beneficial for your health and well-being. And I also want to say that I've just returned from my trip to Australia. I've been in Australia for the last 6 weeks, and I want to thank everyone who I met on this journey. It was such a wonderful journey, as always. Many of you may know that I actually have permanent residence in Australia, and I try to go back every year, and I share, and I teach, and I do radio, and it was just a fantastic visit. So to everyone I met on this journey this year, I want to say a big good day. It's just been fantastic, and I've missed being in Australia already. I've just returned. So thank you all for your hospitality. It was just such an honor to be with you and to meet so many wonderful people from all parts of Australia. So, so I just wanted to say that. And one other thing I want to say. For many of you who are on my list, I have a very special offer out there. And I am the author of a new book, which I think I've talked about before on the show, called The Hemp Health Revolution, the A to Z Health Benefits of Hemp Extract. And I have this really special offer going on right now. So if you buy this organic liposomal hemp extract, the oral and the topical, you'll also get the book, and you'll also get a one-hour DVD that I've recently made. So find out more about that special offer, and it's all of that for $99, which is a huge discount. I just want people to get the benefit from this great healing plant. You can go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and go over to my store, and it's posted there. So something to think about. That's only going to be available for the next couple of weeks. So I just want you to know that's happening. And having said all of that, I am very honored and thrilled to have a very special guest today on the show. We're going to be having a profound and entertaining and enlightening conversation with Dr. Alberto Villoldo. And for people who don't know about Dr. Alberto Villoldo, let me just say a few things. He is a medical anthropologist and best-selling author who has studied shamanic healing practices of the Amazon and Andes for over 30 years. He is the founder of the Four Winds Society and Light Body School and trains certified energy medicine practitioners. The Light Body School is internationally recognized as the gold standard in shamanic education, bridging ancient shamanic wisdom teachings with cutting-edge practices in nutrition, biology, and neuroscience. Dr. Villoldo is the author of 17 books, and I guess number 18 is his latest book called The Heart of the Shaman, Stories and Practices of a Luminous Warrior, which was published by Hay House and has just come out. And I just want to say that I've been following Alberto for many years. I've watched his documentaries, have read some of the books that he has written, and he's one of the people on the planet right now that really inspires and uplifts me. So I want everyone to know that I'm really thrilled to have him on the show, and he's coming to us all the way from Switzerland, where he's on retreat, I think facilitating a retreat, Alberto. And Well, we'll just get into this conversation and learn about the heart of the shaman and really what we need to know during these times of change and transformation. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Alberto Villoldo to the show. Hello, Alberto.
Hello, Cheryl. Thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction.
Well, as I said, I'm very honored to have you be a part of the show and share your great wisdom. And, you know, your writings are so entertaining. I just have to really congratulate you on this latest book and just your delightful, engaging style. You just have such a way with words and metaphors that really communicate some things that are, you know, it's so difficult to communicate many of this, these experiences of this deeper wisdom. I find that to be true. And you do such a great job at being able to kind of convert it into a language where people can comprehend. So again, congratulations on the way you've put it all together and made it available to us.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you very much.
So I'd like us to start from the very beginning, because you began your journey as a very conventional academic. And I always like to kind of give a context of where people were and the journey that got them to doing their life's work, their purposeful, meaningful, passionate work. So can you just share a little bit of how you began this journey from being a successful academic, a PhD, and medical anthropologist, and to the world you are in now?
Well, you know, I began in the brain research laboratory. I was at San Francisco State University, and I had my own lab, the biological self-regulation lab, and it was the only space that we had in the biology department was where they kept all the brains. So I was surrounded by brains. So if I ever needed a second opinion about anything, all I needed to do was reach into a formaldehyde jar and ask. But we were trying to see if we could create psychosomatic health. You know, what are the mechanisms for creating health? Because we know we can create psychosomatic disease. In fact, we all became experts of psychosomatic disease at the age of six. When we didn't want to go to school that day, we could develop the symptoms of pneumonia in 20 minutes, and then the bus would go by and we'd be ready to play again. But how do you create psychosomatic health? And at that point, I realized that I was looking out of the wrong end of the microscope, that instead of going smaller and smaller, and we were taking the brain and slicing it and dicing it and staining it and putting it under the microscope, that I had to go bigger and bigger. So I left my lab and went to the Amazon to work with the shamans that came from a time before ours, before technology, before religion, before this very masculine philosophy and worldview that we have, and that were really primarily coming from a very feminine mythology that was participatory, interactive, that was connected to life and to death, that didn't look at the body as a collection of organs. You know, it's amazing how when you go to a doctor in the West, you have the heart specialist and the brain specialist and the hepatologist that focus on livers, and you have the ones that focus on kidneys, but nobody focuses on the whole body. So what amazed me in working with the healers in the Amazon was what a deep wisdom they had about healing and maintaining health. And I discovered that they didn't treat disease, because that's what we do. We don't have a healthcare system. We have a disease care system. That what they did is they created the conditions for health, and then disease would simply go away or not appear. And those conditions for health had to do with your emotional health. Emotions created disease. And particularly if you had to do with three very strong emotions that were daydreams that turn into nightmares. And that's what this next book is about, is waking up from these dreams that really conspire to keep us sick throughout our lives.
So the reason that this is such a profound work is because I think we're living at a time when the nightmares are, we're kind of locked and stuck in nightmares. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have a TV, but I recently was staying with a friend who liked to watch the 6 o'clock news, and you know, the news that we're fed is filled with violence, it's filled with anger, it's filled with victimization, you know, it's filled with pain, and it's a steady diet, right? We get it every 24/7, right? And I don't know if we fully realize how that energy, that information is defining the world and creating the perception of the reality, and like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, we create more of it as we expose ourselves more to this nightmare world, which we think is the way the world is.
We think it's real, and it is real, but it's not true. And that's the thing about a dream. When you're in a dream, you believe that the dream is absolutely real, no matter how bizarre it is. Do you remember a dream from the last few nights, how exotic and extraordinary it was? And you didn't wake up in the middle of the dream and say, you know, I'm just dreaming. We think it's real. And that's what happens with this dream that we're watching on the news. We think that that's real also. And it is real, but it's not true. It's not a deep truth.
Right. You know, I had an experience when I was about 20 years old, and it was a moment where the spontaneous thing that happened, a spontaneous event, and it was a moment when a veil got lifted, and you know, this was like totally unexpected. I wasn't taking any drugs, wasn't smoking anything, but it just opened as like a peak experience, and it was so profound that it really altered the course of my destiny in this lifetime. And so I lived in India for a while. I've been to the Amazon. I've been with shaman in the Amazon. I've been up in Machu Picchu. I've been in the Andes. And I know we'll talk about some of the shaman who live way up in the Andes who I met when I was there. I mean, I've been very blessed to be on a journey of you know, discovering who I am and my place in this reality.
This is what happens when you wake up from the collective nightmare, and this is what this book is about. How do we wake up into the sacred dream, and which is the one that wants us to have an amazing adventure in life, and not the reasons why we can't.
So that's so fascinating. This term that you use, the sacred dream, really calls to me. Can we explore that a little bit more?
Sure. Well, remember that the traditional societies around the world are societies that are founded on a feminine mythology, whereas our modern societies are very masculine. They're dissecting. You want to rip it open, kill it, look what's inside, what makes it tick. And the whereas the others are integrative. They're holistic. And the shamans, which are the wizards, or the wisdom keepers, they understand that what we call the day-to-day reality is also another dream that we're having, but with our eyes open. And that we can change that dream if we become aware of it as a dream. That you can dream your health differently. That if somebody hands you a diagnosis, you know, when I work with patients, I have somebody walking into my office that shows me an MRI. And the first thing I tell them is, you're not an MRI. You're a living miracle. You're not an MRI. You're not a blood test. You're not a bunch of numbers. You're an extraordinary manifestation of spirit. And if they can subscribe to that, then they wake up from the dream. Because once you are a cancer patient, it's a nightmare. And you can still deal with the diagnosis, but you don't become the diagnosis. You can still deal with the reality of your life, of not having food to feed your children, but you don't need to become impoverished. You don't need to get trapped in the nightmare. And you can find the beauty in whatever dream it is that you're taking part in, but you must wake up inside of it. And that's what I wrote about in this book. When you wake up, you realize what an amazing adventure you're on. You have a human body. There's such a long line of spirits that are waiting to be born in a human body. And we didn't come here to spend another year in psychotherapy. We came here to explore, to love, to learn, to serve. And that's what the sacred dream is made of these ingredients.
So when people are conditioned in our culture, and when we talked about some of the other ways to perceive reality, it's important for people to entertain the idea that the way that we're all programmed, every culture programs their people to perceive reality in a certain way. So in our Western culture, we've been programmed to believe, you know, you go to the doctor and you take your medications and you get your diagnosis, or you go to work and you have kids and, you know, you save your money and then you retire. It's the way our culture has defined us. But it is not the only way we can experience and be in this lifetime. But we have to be willing to open up and to realize there are other possibilities to fulfill us.
Well, here's where we have to tell the difference between what's real, what seems to be real, and what's true, which sometimes can seem very unreal. For example, it's really real that if you live to be 85 years old, that 50%, one out of every two people, will have diagnosable Alzheimer's. This is real. This is statistics. But it doesn't have to be true for you. If you change your diet, if you're able to forgive, to love, you don't have to be in the fat part of the bell curve. So you can. You do have choice and possibility, but you have to understand that what everybody else is describing as real, it's not the only reality, and it's not necessarily true. And this is what wakes you up from the dream into the sacred dream.
And it's often, and usually, as a matter of fact, the nightmare that we find ourselves in that becomes a vehicle to wake us up. Because when someone is dealing with a chronic illness, or they're in a painful relationship, or they're just, you know, kind of existentially lost, and who am I, what am I supposed to do here, those are actual opportunities to begin the process of awakening to their sacred dream, don't you think?
Yeah, it can be. That certainly is true. But you know, Cheryl, they say that you want to catch God on a whisper. You know, not on the 2x4 over the head, not on the diagnosis, not on the. So if you can catch God on a whisper, you're so much more attuned. But yes, when you're in the middle of an apparently desperate situation, it can be a tremendous wake-up call and an opportunity. And ideally, we want to get it a little earlier.
How do you catch God on a whisper?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to quiet the mind so you can listen. Because the mental chatter is so loud that you're not going to hear anybody whispering, much less God. You don't hear anybody screaming. You don't hear yourself screaming to do something different, to change the diet, to help yourself. So you first have to quiet the mind. And, you know, in my earlier book, One Spirit Medicine, I talked about the foods and the diet and the supplements that help you to upgrade and repair the brain. That's really important also, because many of us still think along the lines of the mind-body divide, that they're separate, that we can work with the mind only without giving the brain the neurotransmitter support that it needs, for example. But the key here is to, what the shamans call, stop the world. And I can show you how to do that.
Now?
Yeah, right now.
Let's do it. Absolutely.
It only takes us 3 minutes, you know, so it's with the breath. So the breath is the interface between our conscious ability to regulate things and our very deeply self-regulating autonomous faculties of the body. So for humans, for example, breathing is autonomic. You cannot stop breathing. Nobody's ever committed suicide by holding their breath, right? You can't do it. But for dolphins, for example, breathing is not an autonomic function. Dolphins have to take a breath and go, "Oh, wow, that was so good. I think I'll have another one." They have to decide to take each breath, which is why only half of the dolphin brain sleeps at any one time, so the other half can keep breathing. So we can regulate our breath, but we can't stop it. But that becomes the access point to stilling the mind and quieting the nervous system. And it's with a breathing practice that the shamans do from around the world with different names. And it's like this. So follow me. If you close your eyes and take a deep breath, and another one, and on the in-breath, I'd like you to say to yourself quietly, "I am." And on the out-breath, "My breath. I am my breath. I am my breath." And then at the very top of the inhale, pause, where the inhale becomes an exhale, pause there for a moment, rest there for an instant. And the very bottom of the exhale, before it becomes an inhale, pause for a moment. Find that spot. And I like to do this 3 or 4 times during the day, just for 30 seconds. I am my breath. And there are 2 great benefits. The first one is that you will identify with your breath, not with your emotions. So not with "I am angry," "I am sad," "I am tired," "I am sleepy," "I'm frustrated." No, "I am my breath." You're not any of those other things. You're not angry. Angry is a feeling you have, but you're not anger. You are your breath. And the second great benefit is that the day you take your last breath, you'll be able to release that breath. And with that breath, release yourself and become one with the wind. And you will not get stuck in these realms between the worlds. And you'll be able to go home to the light. Mm-hmm. So it's got immediate benefit and some really nice long-term ones, too.
You know, that's so beautiful because we forget that our breath is such a powerful vehicle to shift our consciousness. And we carry it around 24/7, but we don't really utilize it, or many of us don't really utilize it to the extent that it's like a secret way to shift our consciousness, to heal our body, to quiet our mind. But we often forget we're carrying it around with us all the time. And you know, it's readily available when we remember again. It's so powerful. I used to teach breathing as one of the main modalities in my psychotherapy practice, actually. It was so powerful, Alberto. People had amazing healings just from getting them to breathe.
Well, the beauty of this, Cheryl, is that if you do this for more than, see, the brain resets itself every 20 seconds. And if you do this for more than 20 seconds, you'll be resetting the brain at a place of deep peace. And if you can do that, then you can hear God on a whisper. Then you can hear the whisper of God in the wind or in the rustling of the leaves. And you go, "Ah, God's been speaking to me all the time, all along." And let me tell you a funny story, because when the conquistadors arrived in Peru, they met with the Inca, with the ruler. The priest met with the ruler, and the priest gave him a copy of the Bible. And he said to the Inca, "For this is the word of God." And you know, that's a common expression. So the Inca took the book. He'd never seen a book before. And he put it to his ear. No, this is the word of God. And he threw the book on the ground and he said, what kind of God is this that does not speak? And the priest said to the Inca, the Inca said to the priest, when did your God last speak to you? The priest said, well, 1,512 years ago. And when Christ was still alive. And the priest asked the Inca, what about your God? And the Inca said, this morning at breakfast. So we want to have this ongoing active dialogue with the divine. Yeah. But we cannot have this dialogue when we are asleep and in a nightmare that says that we were kicked out of the garden, that we've lost our original nature, that we could not speak with God, that we're outcasts, that we... No, we're not. We're none of those things.
So I have a challenge to everyone listening. If you think that this is too easy, just to do 20 seconds or a minute or 3 minutes a day of breathing could help you change, I put out the challenge to do it every day for a month. See what happens. Because it doesn't cost you anything, right? It's one of the best ways to support our body and healing and listening to the whisper.
It costs you a tremendous amount if you don't do it. Yeah. You know, if you don't do it, you won't hear the whisper of God in the wind.
Yeah.
And you know, this is what monks do. They go into the monastery for 20 years to get those 20 seconds of enlightenment. But today things are happening too quickly. You can go straight to those 20 seconds of becoming your breath. And then when you get angry or you get restless, you go, I'm not restless. I am my breath.
Hmm. Yeah, that's so beautiful. I watched your documentary, Amazonia. I know you've done several. And you talk about ayahuasca. So I want you to share a little bit about ayahuasca, because I actually went to Peru to be with shaman, the Shipibo people in the Amazon, to experience the plant medicine, the sacred medicine, ayahuasca. And I have actually done it since in a retreat in Costa Rica. Can you talk about what that is, its role, why you made a documentary about it, and how it impacted your journey?
Well, ayahuasca is, I'll tell you, it's an incredible medicine. It's an amazing healing plant from the Amazon. I think it's really misused a lot today. It's used without respect or without preparation, and it's still incredible. It changes people's lives. The problem is that for most people, their brains are broken by the pesticides and by the heavy metals and by the mercury toxicity and the foods and in the water we drink. So you're not able to retain the experience. You see God, you have this amazing epiphany, but then you've got to go back a week later. So that's my only objection to it. It has to be done in the right setting with the master. It's a very powerful psychedelic plant. And it's actually a mixture of two compounds. One of them is DMT, dimethyltryptamine, and the other one is a MAO inhibitor that allows for the DMT to go into the gut and not be destroyed in your belly. But the amazing thing is that you produce ayahuasca naturally. Your body produces it naturally. And let me tell you how this happens. Your body, the pineal gland at the very center of the head loves to methylate, and methylation happens throughout the body. Now, one of the most common neurotransmitters is serotonin. So everybody knows serotonin is the feel-good neurotransmitter. And the formula for serotonin is 5-HT. 5-H is hydroxy, T is tryptamine. Hydroxy is water, so it's 5-water tryptamine. It's a tryptamine. If you take tryptamine, and we modify this every night to turn serotonin into melatonin so we can sleep, but if you tweak it a little bit more, if the pineal can add a couple of methyl rings to it, you'd end up going from 5-HT, a tryptamine, into di, which is 2-dimethyltryptamine. So the brain produces ayahuasca naturally all the time. And it does so when we're dreaming, when we're making love, when we're giving birth to babies, and when we're dying. And particularly when we're dying, so we can die lucidly. So the only reason that these substances work is that we have receptor sites for them. And the problem is that you cannot produce ayahuasca in your brain if you're all stressed out. So that if the stress hormones, which are adrenaline and cortisol, are running the show because you're over-caffeinated and you haven't meditated and you're burnt out, the pineal will not methylate. You will not produce the bliss molecules. And the bliss molecules are the ones that allow you to meditate and to have deep insight and practice forgiveness. So I'm really all for the endogenous ayahuasca, the endogenous DMT, the one that we produce ourselves, but that it requires that you quiet the mind. And you quiet the mind through I am my breath. That's a great way to do it.
You know, you're really talking about the need for a discipline, or for people to be disciplined with a practice to access other states of possibilities, of consciousness, of realities. But it has to start with putting in place some practice that you are committed to on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that without a practice, that you're doing recreational spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you need to have a contemplative practice. It can be writing in your journal. It can be sitting and doing I am my breath. It can be a discipline where you observe the mind. Instead of using the mind to observe things, you use the mind to observe itself. And then you can get the benefit from these amazing plant teachers. But even people that do it casually will have a tremendous epiphany. But generally, it won't stay. It won't stick. It's like you have dinner with God, right? You have this amazing feast and dinner with God, and all that you can remember is the food you ate and the wine you drank, but you don't remember the conversation.
Yeah, you know, and just to kind of complete the conversation about working with plant medicines, I mean, it's a ritual, it's a ceremony. It has to be done for the greatest benefit. In the ceremony has to be conducted in the proper way with the proper guidance, being guided by someone who has the experience and training in the right setting. I mean, it isn't a recreational experience, which, you know, I just want to say that the plant medicine, the ayahuasca experience has become very popular. I know people who, you know, kind of do it with their friends, and it's like I'm horrified to hear that, I mean, because I don't think it's respecting the tradition. And
well, not only that, but there's something else beyond that, which is the fact that ayahuasca has become very scarce, even in the Amazon. So a lot of what people are getting is not ayahuasca, but adulterated. So they're getting other psychedelics mixed in, and this is your brain. So you got to be careful with that. But in the hands of a master, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. So, what do you believe is the purpose of this latest book? You're so prolific. You've written 17 other books. What has kind of compelled you to write this book? And what is it that you want people to receive from the message in this book?
Well, two things. The first thing is that I thought that this was going to be my last book. After 17 books, I really didn't feel like I had that much more to say. But what I had not said was I had not written about the secret teachings of the medicine way, about dreaming the world into being. We all know that we create our own reality, and we can make parking spots and create good times. In fact, I was driving with a fellow Hay House author to my office in Miami, and in my office there's never any parking. Never any parking. And I had a big rental SUV, and this fellow that you know said, "Watch out, Berto, I'm going to create a parking spot for us." And he goes into meditation for about 3 minutes. We get to my office, and there isn't one, but there are three parking spots. And he says, "See, it's not incredible what you can do. You can create reality." And I go, "If you're so good at it, why don't you create parking spots for the rest of your life now, so you don't have to do it every time?" So he didn't like that very much. So if you're using this extraordinary power that we have in our souls and in our minds only to create parking spots, I really invite you to create world peace, you know, to end hunger for all children. And you can do that. We can do that. We can vibrate that into being. So that's the, and that's, the medicine plants show you that you can do that. But then we have to go home and we have to do it. And that's why the book is called The Way of the Luminous Warrior, because you have to be impeccable and you have to be nonviolent and you have to be willing to create the dream, to co-create with the Great Spirit. And that's the, that was my motivation. I'm not sure if I'll write another book or not. I've been saying that for about 5 books now. But this was going to be my giveaway to...
Well, I wouldn't put money on that one.
You would not, right?
You know, but
that's not
but
a good
it comes through you. I mean, you know, when you write, it's a calling. It's, you know, it's part of spirit,
Cheryl,
especially in your
writing,
work.
For me, it's like pulling teeth, my own teeth.
Is it really?
It does.
Yeah.
It does not come back. Some segments do. The stories do, but then you've got to make it coherent. It's a lot of work. It's like having a child.
Yeah.
Luckily, you forget about how painful it is, and then you go, "Let's have another baby."
That's right. Forget the pain. You just feel the bliss when it's out in the world. So Alberto, we're living through interesting times. We're living through times that have been prophesized are going to be challenging, and also opportunities and new emergence of possibilities and consciousness. Can you share what your thoughts and beliefs or experiences are about the time we are living in right now?
Well, you know, I'm in Switzerland as we speak, and I'm visiting a community of people that were, some of the older people in the community were alive during the Second World War. And I asked them, how did it feel, what did it feel like to be in a neutral country, knowing that you were safe here, but that you had the Nazis over the hill, right over the side, right over the other side of the mountain? And they said to me, it was terrifying. We had no food, we were disconnected, we felt isolated, we felt we could be invaded at any time. Every night before we went to sleep, we prayed, and we went to sleep in fear that the next morning we'd be bombed. And that really struck me, because we're living in similar times right now. It's not the Nazis, it's really climate change and what humanity has done to the earth, and the humanity is dying. And the earth is fed up. She's fed up with what we've done to her. But she loves life, so she wants us to live, but at the same time, there's so many extinction events happening. So many creatures are dying off. So many species are disappearing. And that impacts the human psyche. So how can I be well if the earth is dying or if humanity is passing? But then you hear the invitation from Mother Earth that we're here to take a quantum leap in evolution within our generations. That we're the ones we've been waiting for in many ways. That we can take a leap into who we're becoming and become a new human. And it's not going to be in between generations like biology normally works, but within our generations. We're going to be able to grow a new body we're going to wake up from this nightmare of history and of disease to become ageless and healthy, extraordinarily healthy beings within our lifetimes. And we can make that choice. But we have to really step into the sacred dream, what our calling is about, what we came here to do as a community of spirits that incarnated together. So this is the backdrop, is that there's tremendous death happening. And the opportunity is that, wow, we can become an entirely new being. And Mother Earth supports us in this.
So do you think, for people listening, if they're, you know, if they resonate with this message, does it start with just doing that breath? Is that where you would say begin there and see where your spirit takes you once you make that commitment to that process, that discipline, that intention?
I think it can begin there. And then as you quiet your heart and you hear the whisper of God, you hear spirit, the whisper of God in the wind, you'll be guided. You'll be definitely guided as to what to do. But it's not so much about doing right now, it's really about being. And I'll tell you a brief story. I have a good friend who's a Buddhist teacher, and he goes to Japan every year to teach, and he teaches actually the Buddhist, the Zen Buddhist masters. He's a very high-ranking, very wise man from New York. And he tells me that the Buddhist masters in Japan are leaving the city monasteries and going to the mountain monasteries in retreat, because they feel they can do more for the planet right now by sitting in meditation and dreaming a world of that is at peace than by teaching a young Japanese executive how to sit on a cushion in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that with our practice, with our inner practice, which is about being, not about doing, we can make such a difference. But we have to quiet the heart. We have to still the heart, and that will still the mind, and that breath will do it. And that's the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a middle point, too.
You know, having spent many years in Australia and really being very fortunate in having time with Aboriginal elders, going out bush with Aboriginal elders and talking about the dream time, because the Aboriginal culture talks about in their mythology the dream time, how mm-hmm. we are creating. I mean, this is a poor interpretation of a really profound experience, but they talk about how the world was created out of the dream time, and how we are created by the dream time. And it's more than just a metaphor, I think, you know,
yep.
When we really step into other realms, it's more than a metaphor. We are talking more about a truth of, you know, more than just the 9-to-5 that most people are limited to, confined to.
You know, when I asked one of the shamans a similar question, and they said to me, yeah, the world is created from the dream, and you are the dreamer and the dreamed. And I said, well, when is the world created from the dream? He said, Tuesday. And I said, is it like every Tuesday? and he said, no, today. Today is Tuesday, every day. Every day the world is created from the dream time. Not every Tuesday. So every moment is created out of emptiness, out of nothingness, out of the dream. It appears and it returns to the dream. And the heart of the shaman is really stilling the heart to wake up inside the dream, so you're the dreamer. And you can guide the dream to create health, to dream health. You know, there's no more horrible nightmare than to get a diagnosis or to feel that you're losing your mind to dementia. And we need to wake up from these dreams also. We don't have to go that route. We can take charge of our health and of our destinies. And this is what the Aborigines and the shamans from around the world have taught us and have practiced for 50,000 years.
And when people shift their consciousness, it's a different relationship, isn't it? I mean, you're in relationship rather than feeling adversarial in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember one time I was in the Amazon, and I was working with a medicine woman and her husband. And we came to a clearing, and they said to me, Alberto, walk across the clearing and see what happens. And I walked across the clearing, and the first step I took into the jungle was full of song, the macaws and the monkeys and the parrots, the second step and the third, and then everything stopped. And they came up to me and they said, see, they know that you don't belong here. They know you've been kicked out of the Garden of Eden. And I go, sure. You know, I might be from California, but I'm not stupid. I was convinced that the animals had smelled my toothpaste and my deodorant and my athlete's foot powder. So there were two Shipibo Indians right by the edge of the river cooking a boa on a spit. And I went up to them and I greeted them and I asked them if I could have some of the boa fat. They were collecting the boa fat in a Coca-Cola can. And they said, sure, take some boa fat. I shared some food with them. And then I stripped down to my shorts and I began to smear myself with boa fat because I'm convinced I'm going to go back into the jungle and they're going to smell another boa slithering back in again. And they're looking at me a little strangely, and I go, it's okay, I'm an anthropologist, it's all right. And I'm, this stuff really reeks, and I walk back into the jungle barefoot, and the first step is full of song, the second step and the third step, and then everything stops again, except for about 200 flies that I had around me. And it literally took me a decade before I could walk into the rainforest and have it recognize me as a native of Mother Earth, which we all are, have her recognize me as someone who belonged in the garden. I have gone through my healing process and made my way back to Eden. And and this is the great healing that I'm inviting all of us to do through this book, is to make our way back to that state where we can still speak to the rivers and the trees, where we can still talk to God, and where we're not haunted by death. And this is the great awakening that's possible for us today.
You know, that story is so powerful and so profound. It reminds me of when I was talking with one of the shaman during one of the ceremonies, and he was saying the gift of the medicine is to help our Western consciousness awaken to the experience that we are all once again, to have the experience once again that we are connected to all of life. And we, in our Western culture, this masculine culture where we've kind of the blinds have come down on who we are, you know, we're in competition and we're disconnected and we're fighting and you know, in the adversarial world. But he said the journey is to return to a place where we experience ourselves part of the whole, and that healing of reconnecting with all of life, which we are part of. It's very powerful.
Yeah, not only do we experience ourselves as part of the whole, but as the entire whole. I mean, you've had that experience with the plant medicine, where you are indivisible. You're not separate from, you are. There's stars being born inside you. What an extraordinary experience. Well, that happens all the time, even without the medicine. It's just we're not aware of it. And that's the beauty of awakening to becoming a dreamer and participating in this incredible cosmos that's being dreamt by all of us together. And you know, let me tell you that in the development of religion, there are four steps. So the first step is where you see God being outside of you, and you have to make offerings to the gods so they don't get angry. And you kill people, or you offer them animals or creatures. And this is the Old Testament God also. And then this is second level, where you realize that God is not only outside, but it's also within you. and you feel the presence of the divine within you. And we're kind of at that stage. And then the third level is where you understand that God can work through you, that this divine force can work through you. And there are many healers that practice this. God can work through you. And then the fourth level is when you understand that spirit or God can work as you, as me, as all of us that are listening, that, you know, that you're God disguised as you, and I'm God disguised as Alberto, and we're discovering each other. And then when you hear the greeting, Namaste, I see the divine within you, it really means something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wrote this book. You asked me about a half hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a very sacred mission to actually be sharing that through the book, through what came through you and then came through the book. So I guess this is a good place to have you share with us your mission with the Four Winds Society, what that work is about, what that organization's about, your healing work with the luminous healing. Can you just share a little bit about that before we complete our conversation today?
Absolutely. You know, I founded and I direct the Four Winds Society, and we've trained over 10,000 practitioners in energy medicine. And our program is a 28-day intensive training that you can do in two 14-day sections, or you can do it virtually. We have a virtual training now. And we have graduates in over 100 countries that practice energy medicine, that practice the ancient shamanic energy medicine combined with cutting edge brain science, because we have the opportunity to bring these two together, and that are dedicated not only to healing, but to preventing disease and to helping our clients take that quantum leap into their destiny, into who we're becoming as a species. And so this is what I do today. I train modern shamans. We train doctors and psychologists and lay people and people that want to have their work and their job be congruent and work at something that they love to do and that they can be successful at and they can contribute through. So we have campuses in Germany, in Chile, in California, and in New York, where we do our training. And you can visit our website at the4winds.com and learn more about our programs and actually take part in a 10-day detox program that's available for free.
Wow. So you've put together an amazing school. And, which is no easy feat, to be honest, having in my little way, organizing things, to put together a successful school where you have 10,000 people have graduated is quite an accomplishment. So that's very impressive.
Well,
and you know you're being guided. But, again, it's your divine mission that you're fulfilling must be incredibly satisfying for you to see.
I used to think it was only a job, but then I realized that this is what I came here to do. And it's possible for us to do that because the science is now available. Today we have the science that can corroborate these ancient practices. It's very exciting.
So if people need to have that less brain evidence, you have it.
Well, it's not only the evidence. It's today we know how to upgrade the brain. We know how to use the plants that the shamans use in the Amazon or in Africa to trigger epigenetic mechanisms that allow you to grow a new liver or a new heart, not just heal that organ, but repair it completely, regenerate it. We know how to do that now. It's very exciting.
Yeah, yes. We do live in amazing times, and I encourage people to go and visit your website. And the website, again, is the4winds.com. and you'll learn more about the programs that Dr. Alberto Villoldo is offering. And I just want to thank you so much, Alberto, for being with us today, making time in your busy schedule over in Switzerland to share your wisdom. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for the beautiful work you do, Cheryl. Exquisite. Thank you so much and blessings.
Oh, you're so welcome. And to all of my listeners, thank you for joining me today. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Until next time, take care. Have a good week. Bye for now.